It's a really difficult question because, from a futurist viewpoint, I think they have. From an economist viewpoint, and certainly from a viewpoint of the average person, I think that's pretty much what they need to be doing. My concern is around the infrastructure that they're talking about, the roads and the rail, where it's more of the same. And if we're building those roads, and they won't come on to, what, 5, 10 years from now, will we need as many? Perhaps we need to be wiser in the way we use roads, and will we need as many trucks on the road and trains and buses and the rest of it?
There seems to be the belief that we will not just need what we've got, and we will need a lot more because we're still going to be an exporting country.
Absolutely. But is that the infrastructure that we need? It really is it's a model based on history, not based on future. We had that great summit last year of 2020, and we talked about all the things that might be. Well, where's the discussion of that based in this budget? So certainly I think that it's something we need to do to get people employed, but maybe a bit of innovation. Let's start being a smart country. Let's just not reinvent ourselves all the time.
So what should we be doing then as an alternative?
Well, let's look at some of the divergent technologies that are around. There's this thing called claytronics that may or may not eventuate, but it's a nice mindset to start thinking about. Claytronics is something they've been playing around with the state. It's kind of like Star Trek, beam me up. They claim they have a device that will allow us to teleport things around the world. You'll be able to take your cup of water here and send it across to France. Now, I'm not saying for a moment that we're going to see that in the next 5, 10 years. We may never see it, but we need to start thinking around those things. Are there better ways to do it? If we start transporting, will we need the same transportation that we need now? Refrigeration has been one of the big issues in the past. Will we find smarter ways to refrigerate our goods so that we don't need all those bulky containers? Will we find better ways to stock our ships? Are there better ways to transport them? I think we really need to start looking down that road. Innovation has missed out for the last couple of years.
But 2020 was, as you said, just a year ago, and there were plenty of ideas that came up in that. At what stage do you stop saying we're going to look at ideas and actually start putting infrastructure in?
If you ask me today, yesterday. I mean, we need to start making some decisions about what it is. Australia needs not only to do what it's doing today, we really need to plan of what this country's going to be for the next 10, 15, 20 years. What do we want it to stand for? What do we want it to offer?
To be more than just a minerals exporting country. Yeah.
We keep talking about that platitude of being a smart country, and I think we have the absolute capacity to be that, but where's the money going into that?
Do we spend enough on education?
No. Oh, that's a whole different ballgame. Absolutely not. I mean, our kids really have, I think, a woeful education on the whole. There are so many more things that we can offer them and we should be offering them that we're not. And that's not to do with the teachers who I work with a lot and I know are terrific. It's not to do with the schools who do the best they can with the budgets they're given. It's to do with the mindset around them and I think in many ways the miserly money that they're given to do it. I mean, our kids, to use that platitude, are the resources of our future.
So what should we be teaching kids that we're not teaching them now?
I think it's not so much what, I think it's how. I think we need to be investing in our children so that they become innovators, they become forward thinkers. The world that they're going to is very different from the one that I left behind me. When I left behind, it was the 3 R's. We're now going to go into a world where the 3 R's are kind of important. I know they're going to be howling about this, but there's technology to take care of that. And that's a good, bad, or indifferent debate. But the reality is these kids are going to have to go forward. They're going to have to problem solve every day of their life.
So we should be teaching what? Problem solving?
We should be teaching problem solving. We need to have the reality that their careers are most probably going to be 60 or 70 years long. Ours wasn't. They'll live to at least 100. Most of these kids, they'll work till they're in their 70s. They'll change careers six times, and they'll change jobs about 14 times in that career span. We need to teach them their transferable skills. We need to get them out there talking. The other thing that's happening out there in the world is this notion of collaboration, that the world is a very small place now, that you and I can tap into anywhere in the world at any time. And our kids need to learn to do that. And they're starting to. They're the ones who are on Facebook. They're the ones who are on LinkedIn and Twitter and whatever else. They're talking to the rest of the world and having that conversation. We're not using that in the classroom. As recently as yesterday, I had a conversation with a principal who was mandating that he would not allow those types of things into the classroom.
And for what reason?
He thought they were nonsense. They were a distraction.
Right.
And the debate I had with him was that they may be a distraction for him and for I, but these kids are used to multitasking. It's what they do every day. Saying that it's wrong for them, it doesn't make sense because it's the way they think.
Or channeling it, or becoming part of it and channeling that technology into useful ways.
Things. Yeah. So one of the things, there's this really great school I'm involved with, Dandenong High School, that's looking at a new way of working with technology in the classroom.
And Dandenong High School, we should say Dandenong is an area which is probably in Melbourne one of the least I suppose, least affluent areas of Melbourne.
Yes, yeah. That's a very good way of putting it. In fact, this school's been around for about 130 years, and they've literally gotten rid of the old classroom, which up till last year they were using, where you had the teacher at the front of the room on a pedestal. There was a physical pedestal in the room, and the kids were sitting behind in classrooms. And that was not because they didn't want to get rid of it. There wasn't the funding to build anything else. And they've now built these wonderful classrooms where it's a collaborative environment. They have a number of years together, working together, so they might have years 7 and 8 working together. And these kids have a broad palette of things they can work on and ways they can work on it. So they're given a traditional lesson, they might be learning English, and then they're asked to apply it. And they're asked to apply it by putting together a project, by talking in groups, by coming up with some innovative way to think about that knowledge and synthesize it, make sense of it, and teach the rest of the class their way of accessing that information. Yeah. Their classroom's fluid. The teachers realise that for them, these things, these Facebooks, SMSs, whatever they are their way of communicating. That's how they talk to other people.
What about the argument that these things will have an effect of isolating young people? I mean, sure, you've got this whole club going on Facebook or on Twitter, but put these kids in situations where you're confronting people face to face, and they're not as skillful in putting themselves out there.
I actually think that I'm not sure that's quite true. I hear that argument all the time. I think kids are far more savvy than we give them credit for. Certainly they're becoming more insular because those devices ask them to be. They sit in front of a keyboard and all they see is a screen. But if you watch them in the group, they actually interact in a great way. They interact, I find, in a very collaborative way. They actually get together as a group and they seem to come together as that horde of people that talk and converse. And the networking in the groups that I'm going to, you know, the 20, 25, 30, well, 20, 25-year-olds, have a conversation that's far different from the one I used to have. They're actually very open about the technology, about the way they use it, about their life and the things they talk about. I find that they're, in fact, far more giving of themselves than we would ever be. And we were reticent, had to put a mask up of who we were, and we had to pretend to be that corporate person or whatever it was. I tend to find on the whole, and generalising is always difficult, but I tend to find on the whole these people don't have that mask. They don't have the need for it as greatly as we did.
Looking in the region, we're going to see problems with climate change over the next few years, and there certainly will be people from the Pacific region, for example, or the Indian Ocean, where some lands will be swamped. You know, there's no great doubt about it. Some countries are in great peril, and people will have to move. What about young people in countries like Kiribati or Tuvalu, you know?
For me, it's the same conversation, that we need to be gearing them up for that world of tomorrow. Their ability and the things that they're going to be doing and interacting with, again, will be different. You're right. If those lands become less habitable, if there are reasons why they can't do what they used to do before, we're going to have to find new skills and talents for them. The beauty for me, again, is that they are part of this worldwide globe that we have. And whereas before they might have been isolated and they might have had to have coped with that themselves, it's up to the rest of us now to work with them and for them to engage with us into ways that they can move forward.
Mm. Now, we're going to talk to you about cars and how they're going to evolve over the next decade. We have 1 minute until news.
Well, the answer is they are.
They are. I've got a motor magazine at home from 1970 that says, "The Wankel rotary engine is the way of the future. Electric cars coming your way." Now, this is 38 years ago, and we still have not seen them in mass production until very, very recently, have we?
We haven't. And do you know that the first electric car was patented in 1832? That's how long...
That was before electricity. That's amazing.
That was before electricity, but the first engine that they used. So that's how long we've been talking about this thing. Look, electric cars are interesting in the notion of what they're going to offer us, but there are a whole lot of other technologies around too. The problem with most of the technologies moving forward is we don't have the infrastructure to deal with them. You know, if we want to put hydrogen, if we want to put electricity, if we want to put wind...
How are you going to get hydrogen to people?
How are you going to do all of that? Yeah. So there are lots of things out there. It's a matter of what do we want as a society in these cars.